There were two ways to the farm, and the sound came from a narrow track which joined the main road half a mile beyond the other entrance. As we listened, a cow rounded a rocky outcrop and came towards us. It was Blossom, moving in a brisk trot, great udder swinging, eyes fixed purposefully on the door open behind us. "What the hangman?" Mr. Dakin burst out, but the old cow brushed past us and marched without hesitation into the stall which she'd occupied for all those years. She sniffed inquiringly at the empty hay rack and looked round at her owner. Mr. Dakin stared back at her. The eyes and the weathered face were expressionless, but the smoke rose from his pipe in a series of rapid puffs. Heavy boots clattered suddenly outside, and Jack Dodson panted his way through the door.
"Oh, here you are, you beggar!" he gasped. "I thought I'd lost you."
He turned to the farmer.
"By God, I'm sorry, Mr. Dakin. She must have turned off at top of the path. Oh, I never saw her go."
The farmer shrugged. "It's all right, Jack. It's not your fault. I should have told you."
"Well, that's soon mended anyway."
The drover grinned and moved towards Blossom.
"Come on, lass, let's have you out there again."
But he halted as Mr. Dakin held an arm in front of him. There was a long silence as Dodson and I looked in surprise at the farmer, who continued to gaze fixedly at the cow. There was a pathetic dignity about the old animal as she stood there against the mouldering timber of the partition, her eyes patient and undemanding. It was a dignity which triumphed over the unsightliness of the long upturned hooves, the fleshless ribs, the broken-down udder almost brushing the cobbles. Then, still without speaking, Mr. Dakin moved unhurriedly between the cows, and faint chink of metal sounded as he fastened the chain around Blossom's neck. Then he strolled to the end of the byre and returned with a forkful of hay, which he tossed expertly into the rack. This was what Blossom was waiting for. She jerked a mouthful from between the spars and began to chew with quiet satisfaction.
"What's to do, Mr. Dakin?" the drover cried in bewilderment. "They're waiting for me at Mart."
The farmer tapped out his pipe on the half-door and began to fill it with black shag from a battered tin.
"I'm sorry to waste your time, Jack, but you'll have to go without it."
"Without it? But,
you think I'm daft, but that's how it is. T'ould lass has come home, and she's stopping home."
He directed a look of flat finality at the drover. Dodson nodded a couple of times, then shuffled from the byre. Mr. Dakin followed and called after him.
"I'll pay for your time, Jack. Put it on my bill."
He returned, applied a match to his pipe, and drew deeply. "Mr. Elliot," he said as the smoke rose around his ears, "do you ever feel when something happens that it was meant to happen, and that it was for best?"
"Well, yes, I do, Mr. Dakin. I often feel that."
"Aye. Well, that's how I felt when Blossom came down that hill." He reached out and scratched the root of the cow's tail.
"She's always been a favourite. By God, I'm glad she's back."
"But how about those teats? I'm willing to keep stitching them up, but..."
"Nicky, lad,
I've had an idea. Just came to me when you were taking away that cleansing, and I thought I was out late." "An idea?"
"Aye."
The old man nodded and tamped down the tobacco with his thumb. "I can put two or three cows on her, instead of milking her. Well, the old stable is empty. She can live in there when there's nobody to stand on her out tits." I laughed.
"You're right, Mr. Dakin. She'd be safe in the stable, and she'd suckle three calves easily. She could pay her way." "Well, as I said, it's matterless. After all them years, she doesn't owe me a thing."
A gentle smile spread over the seamed face. "Main thing is, she's come home." My eyes were shut most of the time now as I blundered round the park, and when I opened them a red mist swirled. But it is incredible what the human frame will stand, and I blinked in disbelief as the iron gates appeared once more under their arch of sooty branches. I had survived the second lap, but an ordinary rest would be inadequate now. This time I would have to lie down. I felt sick.
"Good lads!"
the corporal called out, cheerful as ever.
You're doing fine. Now, we're just going to have a little hopping on this spot.
Incredulous wails rose from our demoralized band, but the corporal was unabashed.
Feet together now, hop, hop, hop. That's no good. Come on, get some height into it. Hop, hop.
This was the final absurdity. My chest was a flaming cavern of agony. These people were supposed to be making us fit, and instead they were doing irreparable damage to my heart and lungs.
You'll thank me for this later, lads. Take my word for it. Get yourself off the ground. Up! Up!
Through my pain, I could see the corporal's laughing face. The man was clearly a sadist. It was no good appealing to him. And as, with the last of my strength, I launched myself into the air, it came to me suddenly why I had dreamt about Blossom last night. I wanted to go home, too.